the frustration farm that call centers are for everybody involved, right? Too many people calling, not enough people taking the calls, 40% turnover rate in the industry. It's just not a good cocktail. Lots of frustration, lots of pissed off people. AI can solve that. High quality customer service, smooth customer experiences without any waiting on hold.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I'm so excited to introduce our absolutely amazing guest for the day, Will Brown. Will, welcome to the show.
Hey, Suja, thanks so much for having me.
Yes, I'm so excited that you're here and really just impressed with your story and what you're doing in our space of real estate. So everyone, Will grew up in Northern Virginia on a farm, and he quickly became very bored with the constraints of the public education system early on in life. And we're going to get into all of this, but just so you know, he went to a real estate seminar when he was 16 years old. And he's got an amazing story, which we're going to get into. Now he's building an AI business, artificial intelligence, that will help real estate investors do deals. So let's get into it. So Will, thanks for being here. Will you please share with the listeners? Let's talk about that early education period of your life and what inspired you to go to a real estate seminar at age 16.
Yeah. So just, you know, blind and dumb luck. Sometimes the cards go in your favor. And basically, my mom went to this mindset weekend thing, and I wasn't into any of that stuff. I didn't understand any of that stuff. I wasn't even a vocabulary that I had. And so I went with her. She invited me because she knew I was sort of entrepreneurial and always coming up with ideas and trying stuff out. And then inside that seminar, they, you know, had like a real estate one where I was like, hey, you can learn how to wholesale and make $70,000 four times a month with no effort. And I was like, oh, that sounds nice. Right. Let's go see. I was super skeptical. So I was like, let's go see if that's legit. And what we basically saw was probably one of the greatest like acts of, you know, manipulation ever in terms of being able to brainwash people is a nice way of putting it into believing and buying into an upsell, like boots on the ground training program. Here's, you know, how easy real estate is. Here's all the money that we made. And it was just like all the tactics. And, you know, my mom and I were bought in, and then my dad was like, we're not spending 20 grand on that. We'll go buy some books. And yeah. So had a little bit of a sour taste in my mouth coming out of that. But then it was January of 2017. So I went to the seminar October of 2016.
Wait, what was the sour taste from? Like just from not being able to do it?
Yeah. From like thinking that that was the one path that if I wanted to succeed in this industry, like they told me I would fail on my own. I had to pay them $20,000 to get their additional training. Mm-hmm. Okay, got it. I was like, well, I was a little upset because I believe them until January 2017 when I was like, let me do some Googling. And I found the Bigger Pockets podcast and I listened to one podcast, you know, number 77 with Michael Quarles, probably listened to like four times in a row. And my entire world changed. I was like, wow, this is actually, there's a legitimate and growing community. This is again back in 2017. It's much, much bigger now. And then I listened to the next like 250 podcasts every day when I would go on long drives, I would start reading books. And I just decided to become the best sponge I could. I wanted to learn because I was still in high school. I was still a junior in high school. So I had no need to like put food on the table. Huge privilege, huge opportunity at that, right? And I could basically just dedicate all my free time to learning about it. So I put aside the video games and I simply just got obsessed with learning everything I could about how real estate works and real estate investors think and where the market's at, where it's going. All of it. I just wanted to absorb. And I got so inspired by hearing story after story after story of people who just came from completely oddball backgrounds to then get to the point where they were doing $50,000 to $200,000 per month. I was like, why not me? Which is sort of the same revelation most people have right before they jump in. It's a very special moment.
Yeah, for sure. Wow. There's a lot there. I mean,
I want to just go back and hone in a couple points. So what was bringing your mom to a mindset seminar? Because that was a critical piece in getting you into that space.
Yeah, I think she had, this might not be accurate at all, but if my memory serves me, yeah. I think she had a friend who was like selling Arbonne, like that sort of multi-level marketing, you know, and they sort of indoctrinate people too by getting them to, you know, think that they're investing themselves, and her friend invited her.
Okay.
So I think that was the connection. I think that's how we got there. Yeah. It wasn't a regular thing.
Yeah. I do find that, like, you know, a lot of times people get into this space and then you have to continue to kind of find your way to find your tribe and your people and what it is that you really want to do in the space. But along the way, you might get, you know, kind of like you felt after that first seminar, you're like, well, I have to do this $20,000 thing in order to get what they're telling. And I think a lot of people have that experience when they go to their first seminar, where it's like so convincing that this is the way, which is kind of, you know, I definitely feel a bit conflicted about that. But now looking back, are you glad that your dad was like, read some books?
You know, 100%, because it allowed me to, you know, step back and really check in with myself. It's like, this is something that I really want to commit to and think about it. You know, the seed was planted, I like to say, and then over the next couple months it germinated. And then as soon as it broke the surface of the ground and I got a little bit of sunlight listening to that podcast, and then I was so motivated and so inspired because I was so frustrated with public education. It just seemed so incredibly boring and useless to me past the third grade. I was like, oh, it's like I'm drinking water after I've been starving in a desert of like wanting to learn something that could actually be useful and could equip myself with those tools to carve my own path through life. And that has been, I mean, you know, to say that's come true is an understatement because of that.
Yeah, for sure. Totally. I mean, I think it seems like wise advice to just be like, look, like I'm not saying no, never, but like, why don't you start with like reading some books instead of just, you know, forking over $20,000. Also, I want to touch on your point about public education. So, I mean, that's pretty young, I would say third grade, to be noticing that about public school education. Will you tell us a little bit more about, you know, that revelation and just why you were so frustrated with it?
Yeah. So Suja, I have been thinking about this a lot, and my only thing I've come to is that it seems going to sound crazy, but that this isn't my first life. Mm. And, you know, it's probably comes from the idea of, you know, playing a lot of video games where you just like, you fail or you die and you just respawn and you learned a little bit and then you get to do it better. Just like from a very, you know, young age, I asked questions that I guess I just wasn't really satisfied with the answers for, or I felt that there's some level of hypocrisy. And what that looked like is around the third grade, I, you know, got on a computer, I started doing some Googling because everybody's saying, okay, you know, got to get into middle school, got to get into high school, then you get into a college and you get a job. I was like, okay, well, you know, how many people are happy with their jobs? Because most adults that I've seen don't seem pretty that happy. And I found that it's like 60 to 70% of people hate their jobs. And I was like, wow, that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, let me test this hypothesis with data of how many people use their college degree in the job. And it's like 60% of people don't even use their degree. And so from a very young age, sort of that entire, you know, illusion, the dream that you get sold that you're going to get a degree and then you're going to get a job that you love and it's going to be happily ever after. I was like, the odds are not really in my favor for that. And so I just started asking questions. But because I was sort of living that truth and I had been exposed to that data, I just started to trust my teachers less and less and less. And I, like, if I could go back now, I'd sit down with the principal and say, look, what are we doing here? What options do you have? But when you're like 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, you don't have the vocabulary. You don't have the awareness of the world. You just have a lot of frustration. And so my frustration just kept basically boiling up until I was 15, 16 years old. And then that was the initial rocket fuel that gave me the motivation to go so hard into listening to so many podcasts and just becoming obsessed with this, because I was like, it's this, or I got to go back to school and go back to a world of frustration.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, that's very interesting and, you know, very prescient of you to be able to think about that, you know, at such a young age. And it is true, right? Like, I mean, you were talking earlier before the show about how previously public schools were so that people could go get out of the fields and work in factories. And now it's cubicles and training us to kind of be just sort of going along with things, right? And so what was it that you found useful about real estate? Like when you were thinking like, well, this is useful and school isn't.
Yeah, I think this promise of school is that work hard now to get something later to hopefully get you want what you want even later. Like it's indirect value creation. You're putting your efforts here, but you're not going to see the results until far down the road. And like I said, the results did not look promising statistically.
Yeah.
What was interesting about real estate was like, it's not like you have to pay $200,000 to buy a property today. And then in 4 to 6 years, you flip a coin to see if you made the right decision or not, right? It's not really how it works.
Yeah.
You get to actually create the value through forced appreciation by improving operations, improving management, right? Very clear calculations or buying it at a discount and, you know, doing the repairs on it. You can create new value. And so that like instantly when you buy it, and that was what was interesting to me about it. And, you know, I wasn't doing multifamily. I was doing like, you know, $100,000 houses, you know, a two bedroom, one bath, you know, $60,000. My first house I bought for $30,000.
Yeah.
And then wholesaled it for $60,000 to a builder for the lot value. Right. So I was like, this is interesting. And I, you know, did the calculations going, okay, if I were to go get a minimum wage job, $7.25 an hour, are you kidding me? I would have had to work like 500 hours for what just took me 5 hours. I'm sure I can do it again.
Yeah.
So I did it again and again and again, and I just kept making it more efficient for that. Again, that it that value of you spend the intellectual effort to understand it, and you basically get nearly, in the grand scheme of things, an instant return on your money, at least with wholesaling or with flipping, with longer, and even with apartments, right? You get an instant return on equity. You might not have that liquid to cash out, but you're not having to wait and see. You get to put yourself more at stake. You get to take more responsibility. So you win bigger, or if you really screw up, you lose bigger. But at the end of the day, it's on you. It's not on some otherworldly promise that's being made that you'll find a job from somebody else.
Yeah.
So that's like probably the difference as best as I could describe it.
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-C-A-P.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Yeah, for sure. No, I think that was really well said. And it does, like what you said about flipping a coin, it's like, okay, you go to school, you know, most people don't know what they want to do exactly, right? Or they end up doing something because that's what people were advertising for. Those are the jobs that were available at that time. But like the market is changing. You don't know exactly what's going to be in demand one in 10 or 15 years when you graduate school. So it is kind of like flipping coins. Like you don't actually know what the skills that are in demand are going to be unless you're in like a very specific career path. So yeah, so I think that was really well said. Okay. So, you know, you mentioned your first deal and I want to actually just talk about, so I know you said you did a lot of studying before you jumped into it, but will you just walk us through that first deal, how it went for you?
Yeah. So what we were doing, we didn't have any money for mail. We didn't have any technical expertise in terms of running Facebook ads. We didn't have any money.
Is this you and your mom now, or is this?
This is me and my first business partner, okay. Which is a guy I met at a RIA.
Okay.
And so I think it was just cold calling. I think it was just cold calling motivated lists. Highly recommend cold calling at the very beginning to be able to strengthen the muscles, you know, in your nose and your jaw from getting punched in the face with rejection time and time and time again. But after that, I do not recommend cold calling because it's a terrible use of time in terms of the return on time relative to being able to trade your money to be able to have those conversations with sellers on your behalf and then pass it on to you. Maybe we can touch on that later. But basically, got a hold of this guy. He moved up from Louisiana like 6 years ago. done a little bit of renovations to the property, and then he just wanted to move back down because like his military contract had expired. We got to take a look at the property. And again, this is the first one where like, what are we doing here? But we saw that people were buying similarly sized lots for about 60 grand. And he had bought it for about 25 grand a couple years ago. And he was just like, hey, I just want what I paid for. And we're like, okay, this seems like probably there's something here. And so we go out, walk the property, take notes on stuff. You know, first property we're walking, did our best to estimate the repair cost, did our best to look at comps, all of that. And then I go, and we're saying, well, look, okay, if nothing else, he just wants what he paid for it, you know, 6 years ago. The market's gone up in the last 6 years. The property's in decent shape. Unless we're missing something, we can probably make at least a little bit of money on this. It's probably not a home run, but we get good like baseline. Contract the property with him. I put it on the bigger pockets for him. I have two interested buyers. They come out the next day. The first guy comes out at like 8 a.m. And then he leaves. He says, I got to go talk to my partner. I said, okay, but we got another person coming here to look at it after, right? And there's no guarantee it's going to be around. Obviously, he thought we were bluffing. So the second guy comes to the property and the guy's like, okay, yeah, this thing will work. We were asking $65,000 for it because we thought we could, you know, again, we're like lot size of $60,000. This thing's either going to hit or it's not. And so anyway, he's like, well, you know, there's a repair some needed. There's some, you know, there's, you know, updated. We need to update a little bit of electrical. We can pay you 60. And on the hood of our car and, you know, on the side street of the house, we signed our first assignment contract for $60,000. That's when the real work began,
yeah.
Right? Because pretty much everything you could expect to go wrong with it went wrong. The seller's expectation was that he was going to get the money the same day of closing. Virginia is a record and disperse the next day. So he's in the title office, like after we even get to the title company, he thought we could just send him a check in the mail. He was like, I already signed the sales contract with you. What else do I need to do? Oh my goodness. It was such a mess. He was freaking out, throwing a tantrum. He stormed out of the title office, not signing it, basically like blocked our numbers. We had to call him back from another number.
What?
And pretty much, yeah, everything that you could expect to go wrong is probably one of the hardest deals I've ever had to close, the first one.
Yeah.
But eventually we basically realized that there was a holdback. You know, he needed a couple more days to move his stuff out, but he also wanted his money. And so our buyer was like, look, we can't buy the house with him still in it because what if he decides to not leave, right?
Yeah.
And they were like, look, that's not going to work for us. And so our attorney recommended, look, why don't you just give him his money and then give him an additional $5,000 if he moves out by a certain day. And when we called him, I remember I like had the whole script written out. It's very high stakes. It was like, okay, tell you what, here we came up with a solution. We want to let you know that we're negotiating good faith. So we're going to pay you the $25,000. We're going to give you a week. And to incentivize you to leave on the week such that we don't, you know, our buyer's a little concerned that you're going to stay there. We'll give you another $5,000 if you leave on this day or before. And he's like, oh, okay, that's cool. And we're like, oh, geez. And then I think we close the next day for like, a, you know, $30,000 to $60,000. So it's still a $30,000 assignment fee. Crazy. We'd maxed out our credit cards at $20,000 at the time. I had like zero, like $30 in my account.
Oh, man.
So it was quite a ride.
Wow.
For sure.
Wow. Isn't that so crazy? Like you remember that first deal with such clarity, right?
Oh yeah.
And that's amazing. I mean, congratulations. Like it seems like you guys just really killed it and just put in the work, right, to get there. Okay. So, you know, I also know that you dropped out of college, right?
Yep.
And then you were able to do like 100 deals in a year and make $1 million. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So dropped out May of 2018, this first deal we closed in July of 2018. So then 12 months after that, now this is July of 2019. I think we did like our 100th wholesale deal. And so that's the point where I could very quickly ramp up, you know, our bottlenecks. I could very quickly see, okay, what's the limiting agent here? Where's the kink in the hose preventing a stronger flow of dollars to marketing, you know, dollars out to dollars back in.
Yeah.
And that's really where I got the ability to discover that not all people that you partner with are good partners. You know, I got to discover a lot of those sort of legal and entity and all those other pieces while just, again, learning and learning and learning and refining my skill set and understanding not just what were the problems that I was dealing with, but what were the problems that everybody else was dealing with. And so March of 2019, which was, I guess that would be eight to 9 months after the first deal, I'm in a Cabo San Lucas on my first business retreat mastermind with a mastermind I'm part of, sitting in a hot tub, actually, and sort of just like reflecting on, you know, where I was a year ago, freshman in college, and like where I wanted to go. And this problem that I think I was, you know, we were talking about before this, we started recording here, that's just so frustrating, to thinking that you're doing everything right and then being at the end of your day and still have like 50 follow-ups that you need to make, knowing that they're probably going to sell to somebody else if you don't. And you spent so much money and spent so much effort getting those leads. And so I was hiring people while I was there. And I was like, but then someone I had hired was, you know, they were basically saying, okay, well, look, I've gotten better. You should pay me a bigger portion of the deal because I'm getting better, or I'm going to go do it by myself. And I was like, well, wait a second. This is a really tough spot because I can't take all the deals myself. And anybody who's really going to be able to close at a high conversion rate, like, I'm going to need a train. So I'm going to take my energy and time away from talking to sellers to train them. But once they get good enough, they have no reason to stay with me because I've given them everything they need to know. And non-competes are unenforceable as well. And you can't put that in. And so I basically just incentivize people on very high percentage of the deals. It's like, I don't want to deal with this problem again and again and again. And I had plans to scale. And so then in that hot tub, March of 2019, I sort of theorized, what if it wasn't a human being that I had to talk to? What if it was an AI? This was, you know, sort of just crazy, crazy thoughts. I was like, I could probably train it. I was hearing about some AI in the news, what was happening with self-driving. Again, this is back in 2019. There's a little bit more, you know, evolution that's happened so far, but I thought that it was possible. And so I go back and, you know, inside of that, the very next day, I travel to Los Angeles for a Tony Robbins seminar for a week with a couple of my friends who I was at the mastermind with, and pretty much fall in love with Los Angeles and said, okay, we're going to move here. I'm going to pivot my life to go build this AI that no one's built before. I don't know if it's possible, but seems like it could be possible. Then June of 2019, moved across the country to Los Angeles, still running my real estate operation up until April of 2020, but pretty much everything delegated, not really scaling it, not really growing, but just sort of maintaining it, and pretty much put all my effort into building this tech company, incorporated it in October. And now like 2.5 years later, we're actually launching for the first time, which is really exciting, an AI lead qualifier that takes everything that I knew about talking and following with sellers and is put into a, you know, plug and play chatbot on steroids, we like to call it. And so that's been, it's like fully engaged me over the last 2.5 years and allowed me to break away from that, you know, that existential dread of spending so much time and energy and effort and money to get a deal across the finish line, getting that hit of dopamine, and then like an hour later saying, and now I have to start over to get the next one. That just didn't really seem attractive for me to, you know, spend the next 10, 20, 30 years doing. I wanted to build something that I could build off of every single day, what I did the day before. And so that brings us to present day.
Yeah. Amazing. Just amazing. And how is that going? Like creating this technology? I mean, is it literally a robot that is going to be talking to sellers?
Yeah, I guess. What do you mean by a robot?
Like, is it not going to be a person? Is it going to be a computer saying words?
Totally. Yeah. So it's text-based only.
Okay.
Basically, for right now, we're going to add voice later on. But you can build a chatbot in 20 minutes online with free chatbot builders. But why it's taken us 2.5 years and over $1.5 million is because when you actually want to have a conversation, there's so many different parts and there's so many different routes people can go and things they can say. You can't just build a decision tree to say this, then say this, then say this, then say this. It's much more complex. And so it's been looking into a mirror of our own mind, but it's been like cracked and foggy, which is what's the most fascinating thing to me about AI is we get to understand ourselves better through building intelligence outside mm-hmm. of ourselves, mm-hmm. using ourselves as the model. And so the biggest challenge is wasn't even really developing the core IP. It was learning how to build software because mm-hmm. there's a specific process. And I finally got my act together and hired a CTO who's been just a total game changer for us. And, you know, we're still hiring engineers. There's great engineering shortage for pretty much every company out there mm-hmm. right now, very in demand. That would be one of the things that probably would actually be worth going to school for mm-hmm. is engineering and coding. But it's been quite a ride. And now it's coming full circle to the point where I'm back talking with real estate investors every single day, seeing the same, they're still facing the same exact problems I was facing a couple of years ago. And now I'm actually equipped with a tool that I can support them rather than saying, good luck. I can't solve this problem myself either.
Yeah.
And so that's been, you know, it's just extremely rewarding to be able to be in that spot.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's amazing. Congratulations. And I guess, what would you say, you know, are you planning on building this AI so that you can then also sell it, or is it just for you?
Totally. Yeah. So it's like, my first plan with building AI is to take over the world. But then the second plan, I'm obviously kidding. Yeah. Nervous laughter, right? I nervously laughed when you look at some of the different things that other companies are doing with AI. Mm-hmm. It's kind of scary. It's pretty contained. It's pretty pretty benign, very, very very controllable, very is staying in the box, if you will.
Yeah.
Based on how we're building it. Bottom line is I want to actually take this technology and go solve the pain and of customer service, mm-hmm. the frustration farm that call centers are for everybody involved, yeah. right? Too many people calling, not enough people taking the calls, 40% turnover rate in the industry. It's just not a good cocktail. Lots of frustration, lots of pissed off people. AI can solve that. Mm-hmm. High quality customer service, smooth customer experiences without any waiting on hold. I want for us as human beings to interact with companies the same way we interact with each other, naturally through text and voice. It shouldn't have to be this entirely painful process. So bottom line, I actually don't use it I'm not buying properties myself. It's like the Airbnb, why Airbnb doesn't, you know, have their own properties, because it's the tech platform play. For me, it's about how can I get, you leverage the data that we're having and getting in 20 different markets right now to make it better for everybody, such that it's learning new features and everybody's able to access that every single week. Yeah. So for me, the focus is on building the tech company, which is a like completely different animal than a, you know, real estate, you know, wholesaling company.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's my like how I've wired my brain is to think in terms of tech and scalability and how I can support real estate investors in that. Because there's a lot of money right now in real estate chasing after very few leads, mm-hmm. very few deals. And I saw that if there's a way to connect the dots to give people the ability to own their own off-market deal source, they'd probably want to take that money instead and invest that in their own off-market deal, like off-market lead CRM, where they now they have a lot of opportunities, but they're not having to compete with 30 above market offers on the, you know, above asking offers on the market. So
yeah,
that's where we're at.
Very cool. Well, that is very, very interesting, Will. And I just love the, you know, what you're bringing to the table and how you're just continually growing. And it's very, very amazing. So now, will you just please share with the listeners how they can learn more about you and anything else you want to share?
Yeah. So let's see here. We have, I'm on LinkedIn, William Brown. I'm on Instagram, will.jbrown. I mostly post Dragon Staff videos on Instagram. That's one of those sticks that has those spokes on the end that you light on fire. I picked that up last year. Lots of fun. Definitely puts me in a flow state. So that's most of the content, but I'll be posting more real estate like related content now that we're coming out of stealth. Yeah. And then as well as, you know, our site, if you want to connect with me or, you know, talk with us or partner with us in some capacity or, you know, try our software out, titanx.ai, TITANX.AI. I have everything people would want to know there. And you can get a hold of me right from there.
Yeah, that is an awesome, awesome offer to be able to practice, try out this software. Well, thank you so much, Will, for coming on the show and sharing about your story and your journey and everything you're up to. Really awesome stuff. We'll see you next time.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.